Open any celebrated novelist's acknowledgments, and you'll rarely find a creative writing professor listed first. Instead, you'll see names like Chekhov, Austen, Hemingway, writers who've been dead for decades. This isn't coincidence. The uncomfortable truth is that most writers learn their craft not in workshops, but alone with books, reading with the intensity of a jeweler examining a diamond. Every sentence becomes a lesson, every paragraph a masterclass. This approach, reading like a writer, transforms beloved novels into something more valuable than entertainment. They become instruction manuals written in the language of art itself. The question, can writing be taught, haunts creative writing programs. Workshops help writers edit and find community, but something essential resists formal instruction. Real learning happens through literary osmosis, absorbing technique by studying works you love with forensic attention. This means reading with heightened awareness of style, diction, sentence structure, how characters breathe to life, how dialogue reveals what people hide. It's treating writing as a word-by-word process, putting every word on trial for its life. Not casual reading, but active engagement that transforms pleasure into education. When a high school teacher assigns students to trace blindness imagery through Oedipus Rex and King Lear, what seemed mechanical became thrilling, a treasure hunt revealing patterns invisible to casual readers. This skill proves practical, like sight reading for musicians, developing instincts that serve writers throughout their careers. Language is the writer's medium, like notes for composers or paint for artists. Understanding this requires slowing down, reading every word, asking what information each choice conveys. Consider Flannery O'Connor's opening in A Good Man is Hard to Find. The grandmother didn't want to go to Florida. Calling her the grandmother rather than using her name gives her archetypal weight. She seizes the newspaper rather than takes it, revealing fierceness in a single verb. Catherine Mansfield demonstrates the power of omission. The Daughters of the Late Colonel begins, "The week after was one of the busiest weeks of their lives." After what? The unspoken answer, their father's death, reveals the sister's inability to acknowledge loss. Her participles trail off into ellipses, thinking, wondering, deciding, mirroring their exhausted mental state. Alice Munro writes with Shaker simplicity. She was 45 and had been divorced for 9 years. Sometimes telling works better than showing when the language is energetic and specific. Reading carnivorously means approaching texts to admire and learn what each author does particularly well. Facing a writing challenge, depicting a room full of talking characters, crafting a convincing lie, writers turn to masters like Tolstoy or Nabokov for technical assistance. This rewards close reading with the thrill of experiencing the artist's hand and mind, like viewing a masterpiece both from afar and close enough to see individual brushstrokes. For many writers, crafting great sentences matters more than plot. Discussing sentences with another writer creates intimate connection, like mathematicians bonding over elegant theorems. Samuel Johnson's 134-word opening to The Life of Savage remains perfectly clear, turning clichés about wealth into philosophical exploration through measured musical prose. Virginia Woolf crafts an astonishing 181-word sentence that never loses comprehension, proving grammar serves clarity rather than constraining it. Beginning writers often dismiss grammar as irrelevant to great literature. Wrong. Mastering grammatical logic mysteriously enhances thought itself. Rhythm matters nearly as much in prose as poetry. The most celebrated passages move us through cadences that reinforce content. Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried creates haunting power through repetition and rhythmic listing of objects functioning as many biographies. Hemingway advised writing one true sentence when stuck, the truest sentence that you know. Though he never clearly defined true in fiction, perhaps he confused truth with beauty. What matters? Hemingway cared deeply about sentences, used them as sustenance, told everyone they mattered. Paragraphs are powerful tools for shifting rhythm and perspective. Isaac Babel believed they should break only for the effect on the reader, not by rigid rules. A new paragraph lets you quietly change the rhythm, illuminating the same landscape from a different aspect. While schools emphasize topic sentences, Strunk and White suggest using them to indicate topic or aid transition, but avoid making any device a mannerism. Great writers break sensible rules. Beckett, Saramago, and Garcia Marquez constructed extremely long paragraphs. Most guides warn against one-sentence paragraphs. They feel like punches. Overused, they become annoying tics. Reserve them for sentences with enough resonance to justify the attention. Paragraph shifts often represent perspective changes, like cinematic camera angles. Jonathan Franzen's paragraph in The Corrections begins in omniscient third person before veering into a character's subjective view, transforming simple description into loaded family relationship summary. Understanding paragraphs requires examining practice, how Babel builds toward disquieting conclusions, creating literary respiration where readers inhale at beginnings and catch breath at ends. The challenge of narration often centers not on who tells the story, but who listens. Wuthering Heights exemplifies this. Mr. Lockwood frames the tale, while Nellie Dean serves as primary narrator, maintaining enough distance to credibly report gothic happenings while grounding them in everyday reality. Character development emerges through action and moral choices, not physical description. Kleist creates characters without describing appearance. We never learn how the Marquise looks. Instead, he establishes character through moral qualities, describing people as impetuous, wrong-headed, overly emotional, but essentially good at heart, before setting them loose like wind-up toys. Austin dispatches Mr. and Mrs. John Dashwood with devastating efficiency, describing him as not ill-disposed, but rather cold-hearted and rather selfish, adjectives far more damning than the negated one. The most memorable characters emerge through relationships, responses to moral dilemmas, and small details, becoming living entities that haunt readers' imaginations. Conventional wisdom says fictional dialogue should be improved, real speech, cleaned up, and economical. Yet this produces dialogue less interesting than actual conversation. Henry Green's novels reveal dialogue's potential, simultaneously providing text and subtext while exposing emotions and hidden intentions. When Kate awakens after calling out Patty in her sleep, Edith teases her while removing herself from Albert, who turns away, facing Ireland. Green captures conversational reality, letting Albert repeat himself, as people naturally do, rather than following fictional conventions. Details form storytelling's bedrock. During a workshop, a one-legged skiing champion crafts an elaborate gothic tale about losing her leg to a cat bite. The entire class believes her, swayed by one masterful detail, her precise description of her parents' contrasting dietary habits, her father's health food devotion versus her mother's secret candy drawer. This single, authentic feeling detail anchors the entire narrative in reality. In Kafka's Metamorphosis, readers accept Gregor Samsa's transformation partly because of the framed magazine picture in his bedroom. In The Portrait of a Lady, Isabel discovers her husband's relationship with Madame Merle entirely through observed posture, no dialogue necessary. Literature demands genuine courage, facing the fear of writing badly, revealing hidden truths, losing others' approval, discovering unwanted realities about yourself. Isaac Babel described revision as hard labor. I work like a pack mule, but it's my own choice. He meticulously examined every sentence, cutting unnecessary words, keeping metaphors fresh, striving for clear, hard lines. Despite working under Stalin's regime, which eventually led to his execution, Babel maintained artistic standards, proving true art requires freedom of imagination. Writers' biographies inspire during difficult periods. Tolstoy destroyed printer's plates of Anna Karenina for last-minute revisions. Flaubert's correspondence reveals agonizing struggle with Madame Bovary, feeling as dreary as a corpse. Zbigniew Herbert's poem Five Men describes an execution in vivid detail, questions writing unimportant poems on flowers facing such horror, yet concludes one can still offer to the betrayed world a rose. Books carry art's consolations. Chekhov's stories transformed dreary 1980s bus commutes into bearable journeys, offering distraction and deep comfort. Through his vision, nothing was wasted. Even bus stations might someday serve the work. If we want to write, read, and read like a writer, join a conversation continuing across centuries, learning from masters who faced the same blank page.